And we'll move to our next case this morning, and that is the United States against Tanki. All right, I think we have both counsel. So Mr. McLeese, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Richard McLeese, on behalf of Ms. Tanki, comes before the court in this criminal appeal from a jury verdict finding her guilty of 10 charges of Medicare fraud and related offenses. In our brief, we focus in particular on the substantive Medicare payment charges in counts 3 to 8, which co-defendant Susie Avalonosa, who was a government witness, and the government's theory as to those payments, which were concededly twice a month for $3,600 per payment for approximately 16 months, the government's theory was that A, these payments constituted $600 per patient referral fees, and B, therefore, they were, I did not have the full gallery view, I'm sorry. And therefore, because they were $600 per patient referral fees, they constituted illegal kickbacks under the Medicare statute. This was their argument consistently throughout the trial at each stage, and it was also the position taken by their witnesses. Their witnesses, whose testimony is summarized, consistently testified that per patient referral fees were illegal, whereas
Mr. McLeese, can I interrupt you for a minute? I'm looking at the indictment itself, counts 3 through 9, and the charge is that she paid, et cetera, remuneration to a person to induce the referral, and it doesn't specify whether it's per patient or whether it's a lump sum per month. It simply asserts payments for referral of patients. The statute doesn't seem to care whether it's per patient or not. And I think that the evidence is pretty clear that there was sort of an estimate and an expectation, even if it wasn't down to the dollar, and that she was actually trying to conceal what she was up to by structuring it that way. So why wasn't that plenty of evidence to support the jury's verdict as charged?
Judge, I think the problem here is that the government's theory throughout the case and the testimony of their witnesses was that it did make a difference whether it was a lump sum or a per patient referral. And it was the government's theory and their evidence to which we as the defense were, of course, responding. If the government had tried this case on the theory that it doesn't make any difference whether it's a lump sum or whether it's per patient, the only thing that makes a difference is whether the payments are made with the intention of yielding patient referrals, the defense would have been different, because the defense in that case would have likely involved focusing on the requirement of willfulness and the question whether Ms. Tanki believed at the time that making lump sum payments contravened the requirements of the Medicare statute. And her testimony might well have been introduced then, and we might also have relied on what's sometimes referred to, perhaps a bit misleadingly, as the advice of counsel defense, which was litigated.
Can I ask, so certainly this distinction between per patient and lump sum does not appear in the indictment. Maybe it's in the government's opening statement, but are you saying that the trial strategy evolved only at the opening statement? This, again, there are statutes that say flat fee remuneration violates the statute, Nagelvort, for example, and some others. So I'm having trouble accepting the idea that the government was really that narrow in its approach to this case.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the statements from the government throughout the trial proceedings, from opening statement through responding to our Rule 29 motion, to closing argument, to closing rebuttal argument, their argument was consistently that it was a per patient mode of payment. And I think that perhaps the reason why they chose that approach is because they realized that their witnesses, whom they would be calling to testify, took the position, as detailed in our brief, that the law does draw a distinction between per patient referral fees and flat fees for which there is some sort of implicit or maybe explicit goal of a productivity goal. And it's certainly the case in many fields that there are productivity goals, whether you're a salesman, whether you're a lawyer working for a big firm and are expected to bill a certain number of hours. There are certainly many areas where there are productivity goals or aspirations.
Well, that's true, but under the Medicare statute, pay to play is not something that's acceptable. You're not supposed to pay directly or indirectly any remuneration to induce patient referrals. So there's no prohibition like that that I know of that tells big firms they can't say, we expect you to bill 2,500 hours a year, whatever they say.
I understand. But again, as the defense, we are responding to the theory embraced by the government and its witnesses throughout the trial. And as this court said in the Barda case, it doesn't make a difference for these purposes whether the government might have prevailed on some other theory. The legal sufficiency of the evidence must be evaluated strictly in terms of the theory that they relied upon at trial. Because otherwise, Your Honor, what the court's doing would be to affirm the legal sufficiency of the evidence on the basis of a trial that Ms. Twonky never had. She did not have a trial where the government's theory was argued to the jury and where their witnesses testified that it made no difference throughout.
Did they argue the other way, that it did make a difference? They didn't say it could only be based on a per patient.
They said, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, the statute says you can't pay for patient referrals. It doesn't say individual or otherwise. And the fact that you try the case based on individual people that got that doesn't make any difference.
Well, Your Honor, it may not make a difference if the government had chosen that theory. But having chosen a particular theory and having the defense shape its defense in response to the theory articulated by the government and its witnesses, it seems to me that there's an element of a bait and switch or sort of a shell game. If you are putting out a theory of guilt, the defense responds to that theory of guilt, and then on appeal, you're changing to a different theory of guilt that you never argued at trial.
Did the instructions say that it had to be per patient?
The instructions did not say that, Your Honor, but I think it's fair to say that particularly whereas here you have rather vague language, that the instructions tend to be understood by the jurors in light of the lawyer's arguments. And I think that there are a number of cases that hold,
for example, did you ask to have instructions based on the fact that it wasn't per patient?
Well, you'd already filed your Rule 29 motion at that point, so this issue was certainly on your mind.
Actually, the Rule 29 motion, it was certainly on my mind as a matter of trial strategy and argument, and our whole strategy was shaped by the intent to respond to the theory as presented by the government. And again, Judge Connie, I would refer to the Barta case where the court said, and they said this in overturning the defendant's conviction on the basis of legal insufficiency, they said it doesn't make a difference if some other theory might have been legally valid. The government is stuck when they come to the appellate court with the theory that they tried the case on. I see that my time is up, Your Honors, and I will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I agree.
May it please the court, Sophia Vickery for the United States. There was overwhelming evidence in this case that the defendant paid Susie Abiunosa kickbacks in exchange for patient referrals. Multiple witnesses described the arrangement between the defendant and Ms. Abiunosa. Ms. Abiunosa and the defendant had an arrangement. Ms. Abiunosa was to refer 10 to 12 patient referrals per month. In exchange for that, the defendant paid her $3,600 twice a month.
So Ms. Vickery, it would be helpful for me at least if you would address Mr. McLeese's primary argument, which is that they were somehow misled into thinking that you were really saying $600 per patient and that you didn't prove that, that you proved only that there were lump sums going back and forth.
The government's theory on appeal is the same as it was at trial, which is that the defendant paid Ms. Abiunosa literally in exchange for patients, and that's what's required to violate the statute. I think that the confusion about potentially the per patient or quota arises from the fact that this arrangement between the defendant and Ms. Abiunosa, 10 to 12 patients on the high end, that's $600 per patient. So a lot of the witnesses described exactly how they understood that arrangement and what happened when Ms. Abiunosa brought the referrals to the meetings at Hexagram and the defendant paid her. I just wanted to point out that at opening, that's the transcript, pages 13 and 17, the government said that the defendant bought the names of patients to enroll, entirely consistent with our theory on appeal. And the same at closing, that's the transcript 985 to 986. It's also, as Your Honor mentioned, in the indictment and in the jury instructions, that's page 975. It's a violation to induce the referral of an individual or individuals to another for the provision of services or for the arrangement of the provision of services.
No in terms of counsel, no instruction as to individuals, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
No instructions as to payment to individual regarding individuals.
Correct. There was no instruction that it had to be that each payment had to be linked to a particular individual or the particular's individual name. The instruction, consistent with the case law in this circuit, is that payments to compensate past referrals or induce future referrals, payments that are made in exchange for referrals, are a violation of the anti-kickback statute. And that was the instruction provided to the jury. At that point, it's a factual inference. The jury rejected the argument that the defendant is making on appeal and also made at trial that the payments were flat fees and accepted the government's inference, which is also supported by the evidence and the testimony of the witnesses who described their understanding of the arrangement between the defendant and Ms. Abiunosa. Those witnesses included Ms. Abiunosa herself, pages 287 to 289, Ms. Buenavista, who was a manager at Hexagram, who also attended the meetings, and Mr. Jimenez, who was the director of finance at Hexagram, that's 382 to 383, which is every person who was present in those meetings with the exception of the defendant. Each of those witnesses testified as to their understanding as to why the defendant was paying Ms. Abiunosa and what those payments were for. All of them explained that they were in exchange for the patient referrals. If the court has no further questions, the government would ask the court to affirm the judgment of conviction.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. McLeese, your time had expired, but we kept you busy with questions, so you can have an extra minute if you have some concluding thoughts. If you can get yourself unmuted.
You have our sympathies, Mr. McLeese.
We're still not hearing you, Mr. McLeese, because you're still on mute. You'll have to find your... Okay. There you go. Okay.
I apologize. I flunked technology. There's no dispute that these payments were in exchange for referrals, in the sense that there's no dispute that the purpose of these payments was to generate referrals. There was a dispute as to whether, as the government contended, these were per patient referrals. If the government had at trial relied upon the theory that they're relying on in this appeal, as I indicated, the defense would likely have been different insofar as it would have been relevant to the decision of Ms. Twonkies to testify on the question of willfulness, whether
Counsel, you didn't object to the instruction that didn't make no reference to individual patients. Nor did you tender instruction that related to only individual patients.
No, I was responding to the arguments that the government made throughout and that their witnesses testified to.
All right, thank you very much.
Arguing now something that you didn't present at trial.
Go ahead, you can respond to...
Okay, well, I'm not sure that I heard your point, Judge.
I said you're arguing now something you did not present at trial. That is, it could only be guilty if it involved individual patients.
Your Honor, of course, the defense is in the position of responding to the legal arguments and theories that the government propounds, and that was what we did. And if the government had relied on this lump sum theory, we would have been prepared to introduce the testimony of a lawyer in regard to the so-called advice of counsel defense.
The jury was instructed as to, not as to individual patients, but as to referral in general.
Yes, but Your Honor, I submit that the instructions in this case and in other cases are understood in the context of the party's arguments. It's not uncommon, for example, for what might appear on its face to be a flaw in an instruction to be upheld because the jurors would have understood that instruction within the context of the lawyer's arguments. And I submit that same principle holds here.
All right. Thank you very much. I think we have your argument. The case is taken under advisement.